The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why Christians say it's wrong to take drugs. Do they really get such an idea from the Bible, or is this just kind of a legalism that developed over the years? And isn't it inconsistent anyway? Isn't caffeine a drug? Don't Christians drink coffee? Don't they drink soda? Well, my friend, it's hallucinatory drugs that concern us, or any kind of drug that has enough of an effect on the mind to erode our proper senses, cut down our reaction time, any drug that clouds our thinking, that's the issue. It's the same reason drunkenness is a sin, even though drinking in moderation is not a sin. Jesus drank wine. His first recorded miracle was turning water into wine. But when alcohol or drugs start affecting our minds, it opens up the door for demons to start influencing us. Demons, spiritual beings, enemies of God who seek to control or at least deceive us. You may not believe in them. That's fine, because they're just delighted that you don't believe in them. It makes it easier for them to work, and they do have a back door to our mind. They can influence us more easily when we're under drugs. They would rather have us under their influence than the influence of the Spirit of God. Of course, there's also a lot of other practices which give demons access to our minds. Any involvement with the occult or supernatural, and a lot of times that stuff's just phony baloney, but sometimes it's a genuine supernatural power, but we don't take the time to question the source. Witchcraft, tarot cards, Ouija boards, seances, astrology, palm reading, tea reading, crystal balls, in short, any kind of sorcery. Now then, bringing this back to drugs, the Greek word for drug in the Bible is pharmakia, where we obviously get the English word pharmacy. Pharmakia not only meant drug, but could also translate as sorcery. Isn't that interesting? In any event, I'm starting to understand why so many Democrat candidates support the legalization of marijuana. One has to be high on that stuff to defend their policies. Unfortunately, their ideas are catching on. My favorite entertainer of all time, Dick Van Dyke, is endorsing Bernie Sanders. The great irony is that Mr. Van Dyke would never have had his fulfilling and lucrative career under a comrade Bernie presidency. He has made a television ad explaining how Sanders' age doesn't concern him. He says, well, I'm 20 years older than Bernie, and I still have my marbles. It pains me so much to say this to an artist whom I admire. Mr. Van Dyke, you may not want to brag about not having lost your marbles in the same commercial where you endorse Bernie Sanders. And while we're on the subject of somebody not being exactly the sharpest tool in the shed, the man who finally won a primary yesterday. Yes, it's time once again for our Joe Biden update. Now, you can't really make this stuff up. Joe Biden's actual words, I'm looking forward to appointing the first African-American woman to the United States Senate. I guess he's too busy reminding us how stupid President Trump is to remember that senators are elected and not appointed. I know he meant to say something else. He always means to say something else. And he keeps saying stuff like this. How many years did you run for the Senate yourself, Joe? As for Senator Kamala Harris having been on the debate stage with him only months ago, I suppose that's a distant memory to Joe, like his arrest while trying to visit Nelson Mandela, or the time he described President Roosevelt going on television right after the stock market crash of 1929 to explain the situation to the American people. Joe, cut it out. You're going to put the Onion and the Babylon Bee out of business. But the Democratic establishment would still rather have a Biden nomination than a Sanders nomination. They're afraid a Sanders nomination will hand the election to Donald Trump. How fun in last week's debate watching our candidates try to take out Sanders and scramble for the mantle moderate so that they could be deemed electable. For the record, and I cannot say this too many times, they don't really care that Sanders is a socialist. They, too, are socialists. They care that Sanders admits to being a socialist because they assume that makes him unelectable in the general election. In this vein, we could at least credit Sanders for his honesty, not much credit for his intellect, not much credit for his moral compass. But while watching a lot of this has been fun up to now, I have some very sobering words for my fellow conservatives. I'm hearing too many express hope that Bernie Sanders gets the Democratic nomination because supposedly Trump will beat him in a landslide. After all, the free, flourishing Trump economy versus the track record of government-controlled socialism will be so clearly in contrast. Be careful what you wish for. While I, too, am inclined to think Trump would win, lessons from the past should teach us to never assume anything. I realize we are hearing from the mainstream media and Democrat establishment that a Sanders nomination would spell certain doom for their party. Well, my friends, that is just exactly what we heard about Trump in 2016. The GOP was fearful of his nomination. The mainstream media salivated at the idea, inviting Trump on their shows time and time again in the hopes that it would happen, in the hopes of helping the process. After all, this crazy nutcase extremist loudmouth stood no chance against Hillary, right? Keep in mind that both men have one thing in common. It's only one thing, but it is significant. They are both populists. Now, while Sanders doesn't draw crowds nearly as big as Trump's, his rallies are still big. Especially when we compare them with the other Democrat candidates, many people have problems with Trump's bull in a China cabinet personality are at least happy with our economy. Well, what if the economy goes south? We all saw the stock market this week. Yes, that could turn around quickly tomorrow. And yes, the American economy is still good. Jobs are still good, but it will still be 8 months until the election, an eternity in the world of politics. Well, no thinking person could view Sanders as anything but a threat to a good economy and a lethal solution to a bad economy. Let us not be so naive as to believe most voters actually think. Just imagine America's financial stability in jeopardy come November with Bernie promising all this free stuff to people who are too emotional to ask how it will get paid for. As I said last week when Mike Friedenberg was on as my guest, President Trump should change the nickname. Stop calling him Crazy Bernie and start calling him Dangerous Bernie. Once again, I remain optimistic, but only cautiously so. We are fools if we take anything for granted. A battle for the soul of our country has been going on for quite some time, and the split is virtually 50-50. Do not kid yourself. Sanders could win. Work hard and pray hard against that happening. His presidency would be a nightmare. We would no longer be the United States of America. We would be the Union of American Socialist Republics. We would go the Venezuela way. We would go the way of Cuba. Cuba! Big in the news this week, Cuba, a communist dictatorship where dissenters are routinely imprisoned and routinely executed. But thank God that due to Fidel Castro, a literacy program was started. After all, somebody needs to read the obituaries. Yeah, Bernie Sanders loves their literacy program. And during last week's debate, he had praise for Fidel Castro, all the while calling Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a reactionary racist. If he really believes this, he's an ignorant buffoon. If he doesn't believe it and is saying so to score cheap political points, he's an evil traitor to his own people. Yes, his own people. Good old Bernie went out of his way to remind us that he himself is Jewish, which supposedly means he gets a free pass to criticize a Jewish country. He's supposed to get a free pass for this thoughtless, irresponsible statement. Well, I too am Jewish. What do you think about that? I too am Jewish, and I'm here to tell you it is not uncommon for Jews to often be their own worst enemies. Far too many Jews in both America and even Israel have more allegiance to liberal leftism than their own religion, and in some cases, their own nation. Thankfully, a fair amount of Jews in America are waking up to observe that the Democrat Party, which once defended them, has been hijacked by anti-Semites like Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and now apparently one of the two grouchy old men from the Muppet Show balcony. As for Israel, the Arab citizens of Israel have the same rights as any other citizen. The only legal difference is that unlike Jewish Israelis, they are not required to join the army, since this could in most cases force them to fight fellow Muslims from neighboring warring nations. The truth is, there has been so much historical revision about Israel, far more than this monologue can discuss, revision which needs to be exposed and set straight if you want real information rather than the blithering idiocy of a very dangerous candidate. I have a whole series of radio programs about Israel posted to my website. I also have a book available off Amazon, The Holocaust Against Israel. By the way, Bernie, while we're on the topic of a debate which combined the subjects of socialism, racism, and Jews, it may be time to remind ourselves that the architects of the German Holocaust made up a party which called itself the National Socialist Party. Anyway, last week, everyone attacked Bernie. He did not get as much opposition from Elizabeth Warren. She knows her days in the primary are numbered. Her only chance now is to kiss up to the forerunner in the hopes of getting a VP slot. Of course, she still went after Michael Bloomberg. Strange attack from Elizabeth Warren over Bloomberg's alleged remark, which he denies, telling a female employee to terminate her pregnancy by saying, "kill it." While the remark, if true, is horrific and should certainly be called out, I cannot help but ask Senator Warren, are you now admitting the unborn child is a life? That seems rather contrary to your stated opinion up to now. Or is your only concern getting elected, an accomplishment for which you will say or do anything? Speaking of politicians willing to say or do anything, Democratic candidates, along with Nancy Pelosi and Charles Schumer, have, of course, weighed in on the coronavirus. And we'll talk about how they weighed in when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
AM 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Well, Nancy Pelosi says that President Trump's request regarding the coronavirus for $2.5 billion to tackle it is, quote-unquote, long overdue and completely inadequate to the scale of the emergency. Now, the fact that Pelosi's trying to politicize this, I just fell out of my seat. I could not believe it. But, of course, it's a lot of nonsense. The APA, no conservative organization in any way, shape, or form, the APA has debunked such drivel. Now, I don't usually read out loud an entire news article. And this isn't a very long one, but I don't usually read a whole article anyway. But there's been so much distortion on this matter, I want to set the record straight. And the fact that this is set straight from a rag that is not conservative, I think that's significant. So I'm reading from the APA, February 26, 2020. That's just a couple of days ago. Democratic presidential contenders are describing the federal infectious disease bureaucracy as rudderless and ill-prepared for the coronavirus threat because of budget cuts and ham-handed leadership by President Donald Trump. That's a distorted picture. For starters, Trump hasn't succeeded in cutting the budget. He proposed cuts, but Congress ignored him and increased financing instead. The National Institute of Health and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention aren't suffering from budget cuts that never took effect. Indeed, the money that government disease detectives first tapped to fight the latest outbreak was a congressional fund created for health emergencies. Some public health experts say a bigger concern than White House budgets is the steady erosion of the CDC grant program for state and local public health emergency preparedness, the front lines in detecting and battling new disease. But that decline was set in motion by a congressional budget measure that predates Trump. The broader point about there being nobody here to coordinate the response sells short what's in place to handle an outbreak. The public health system has a playbook to follow for pandemic preparation, regardless of who's president or whether specific instructions are coming from the White House. Those plans were put into place in anticipation of another flu pandemic, but are designed to work for any respiratory-borne disease. That was from the APA. But of course, claiming that Trump's response is slow is not the only criticism. Here's some words of wisdom from Chuck Schumer, President Trump should have learned the lesson that China did. Hiding the truth makes things more dangerous. The American people need to hear the unfiltered truth from health experts. I hate it when I hear politicians use that phrase, the American people. I don't know. It just grates on me. I'm just doing this for the American people. Anyway, Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, vehemently denies this. Speaking with Chris Matthews on MSNBC, he said that was completely misconstrued, Chris. I'm not being muzzled. He said it again this morning on Fox. He says, so just look at me. I'm on TV. I'm talking about, do I look like I'm being muzzled? And then both Donald Trump and Vice President Pence are accused of being anti-science. Well, the logic here is if you're anti-science, how can you do something about this horrible disease? And why are they being called anti-science? Well, there's a variety of reasons. Former Bill Clinton aide Richard Goodstein on the Ingram angle last week expressed concerns about the Trump administration's coronavirus response because, he put it, the president is personally anti-science, his words. And as an example, he referred to the president's views of climate change. Now, remember last week's show, Mike Friedenberg, this is before too many people were talking about coronavirus, Mike Friedenberg said they would find a way to blame this coronavirus on Trump. Now, that was an easy prediction. Mike knew it was an easy prediction. I responded somewhat tongue-in-cheek that they might even relate it to global warming or climate change. And then I immediately added that it seriously would not really be beyond them to do that. Well, Goldstein, you got to love this. Goldstein says Trump's views about climate change are a hoax, and therefore he's ill-equipped to deal with the coronavirus. Now, it is true that Trump's views of climate change have been contradictory over the years. That is true. But his current view is that it does exist, but it's naturally occurring. He's not convinced that it's coming from man. That is not a view that's far away from most scientists. While they agree that we are in a warming trend, there is no consensus that it is necessarily man-made. As for Mike Pence, the criticism is twofold. The first one, and I'm reading this according to U.S. News and World Report, Pence reluctantly agreed to authorize a needle exchange program in Scott County in March 2015. This is when he was governor. After the epidemic centered there, saw the number of people infected with HIV skyrocket, with nearly 200 people eventually testing positive for the virus that year. Okay. But he did authorize it reluctantly, but he did authorize it. His concern had been that of feeding the drug culture. Bottom line, he did author it. The other criticism, he prays. Yes, you heard me correctly. He prays. Bernie Sanders says Pence's response to the HIV problem was to pray it away. No, Sanders. Yes, he did say he would pray about it. He never said that was all he was going to do, you pathological liar. He said he would pray about the decision to allow the needle exchange, which he eventually allowed. Now, granted, prayer is viewed as anti-science by today's elitists. Well, I believe in prayer. I also believe in science, such as the science of genetics and biology, undeniable science, which tells us exactly what determines being male or female, instead of allowing a kindergarten boy to decide he's really a girl. Honestly, we don't need any more lectures on science from the left.
Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wire. wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. WNS Electric.
Listen to this customer review of Bob Siegel's novel, Choice of the Lorelei. I saw this play on which the story is based many years ago. Elements of it have stayed with me over the years as it expanded my imagination about how things might have been in ancient times. It was also very exciting to see this story intersecting with the other works by the author. Very different stories, yet linked by a common element. I can hardly wait for more. Choice of the Lorelei, available in ebook or print copies from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Said, never let a good crisis go to waste. Boy, the Democrats sure aren't. So on one hand, Trump hasn't done enough about the coronavirus. On the other hand, one of the reasons that the coronavirus in the United States has been restrained and slow so far, and we don't know what's going to happen, but so far, very slow, very restrained. And the reason for that is because of Trump's border policies. But alas, that too has been criticized. It didn't take long for political correctness to offer its brilliant insight. The Atlantic, right from the beginning, described Trump's policy of restricting travel from China as a double down on xenophobic suspicions, and went on to say, guiding Trump's response is a hard-headed nationalism. On January 31st, the administration announced strict travel bans. Most foreign nationals who'd recently been to China have been barred from entering the U.S., and Americans were warned to stay clear of the country. Vox, talking about anyone with these sentiments, says the panic has exposed a deep-seated xenophobia, and with it a symptom of its own people has surfaced hostility toward East Asian people. Of course, he just put a restriction on people from Italy coming. Now, how are they going to turn that one into racism? They're white in Italy. Ladies and gentlemen, assuming the moronic nature of this position could be placed on hold long enough, I will offer a simple question. Is it possible, just remotely possible, that people can have zero problems with Asians or any others wanting to come to the United States and instead be concerned only about a virus that has so far infected 85,435 people and claimed the lives of 2,933 people? And that's assuming China has been giving us accurate numbers anyway. Uh-oh. Well, here we go again. Now, since I made a comment about China, accusations may return. Okay, then another question. Is it possible to criticize the government of a country for lying without accusing every citizen in that country of being a liar, especially when this particular government has been caught in lies and deception time and time again? Well, if you would like to weigh in on any of this, you can reach me through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. Fran says, once again, Bob, you've cut through the obvious to expose truth. Regarding Joe Biden's latest eloquent words, Kevin says, Joe was always a gaff-a-minute guy. He could hide in Obama's shadow, but now he's in the limelight. Everything is exposed. Robbie says, this man needs to check out of the room. Ross says, I'll tell you what I'm praying and hoping for. Condoleezza Rice for president. The first woman and the first all-black president who's a conservative. we'll get even more of the black vote than we already have. What will the left do with that? Their heads will literally explode. They will lose their minds. Get the straitjackets out for that one. Candace Owens is the White House press secretary. LOL. Oh, happy day. Well, I agree with you on two of these points, Ross. Yes, that would send the left into a tizzy. They'll have to return to their incredibly stupid narrative about how conservative blacks aren't really black, but are instead Oreos, black on the outside and white on the inside. And I'm also a big fan of Candace Owens. Condoleezza Rice is another story. She's pro-choice. I would have a serious problem with her. My commentary about conservatives hoping for a Bernie Sanders nomination because they assume Trump would win, and my caution about being careful what you wish for, that brought on a flood of comments. Teddy says, correct. There are too many young people that are all in for Bernie Sanders. It's frightening. Hopefully common sense wins the day. Steve says, agree, Bob. We have to get out and keep this country. Phil says he's not going to win. Two or three candidates will drop out, and the ones still left will start getting more delegates in the latter states. They will betray Bernie at the convention. I called it a week ago in mid-January. Well, I hope it happens that way, Phil. I hope it happens exactly that way. I hope you're right. Paul says having a socialist leading a major party in the U.S. is a bad precedent for the country. We have to look beyond only this election, as vital as it is. I totally agree, Paul. Even if Trump wins, a growing number of millennials think socialism is great. It's a great thing because they've been indoctrinated. Indoctrination, ironically, being one of the hallmarks of socialism. Trump winning merely means a temporary reprieve. We need to look ahead, far ahead. Brendan offers a very long response, but an important one, so I will read it in its entirety, commenting along the way. I think the Dems are doomed either way. Nominate a moderate, alienate the base, and Bernie bros walk. Nominate Bernie, the moderate Dems, blue-collar workers, many union members, and most regular people who don't want socialism like their private insurance run away from Bernie screaming. As long as Trump doesn't make any catastrophic mistakes, and as long as the economy doesn't tank too badly close to the election, Trump will probably win. It's Donald Trump's to lose. Oh, I hope you're right. I do agree that if a moderate, so-called moderate, steals the nomination from Sanders, his people will stay home, and that will be good for Trump. Brendan continues, every Republican and anyone who doesn't want the country going down the toilet needs to assume I'm wrong and vote Republican. See, I like that. He says he's pretty sure Trump's going to win, but let's not assume anything. Boy, those words sound familiar. Like my words early in the show. Exactly, Brendan. Perfectly said. We'll be hopeful, but we won't assume anything. Brendan continues, isn't the lowball estimate just for Bernie's Medicare for all something like $40 trillion? All the physical money from every country on earth, if you put it together, adds up to $60 trillion. This would be the most expensive program of any kind the planet has ever seen in its entire history. And that's just one program. This program alone will either never get passed, or it will single-handedly bankrupt the country and cause a global depression that will make the Great Depression look like a cute little tea party. If Bernie wants headlines, he'll get headlines, but no bread. Oh, no, he said, actually, if Bernie wants bread lines, he'll get bread lines, but no bread. This is ignoring all of Bernie's other crazy ideas. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. As a Christian apologist, I hear scorning and ridicule all the time from Bible skeptics and unbelievers. Some churches will still respond to such people with love and understanding. Others do not.
You Christians are such morons. There's no proof that God exists, and only a pea brain would believe in miracles. Wake up! Step into the 21st century. Besides, Christianity is responsible for most of the world's problems.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Relax, my friends. That's not the kind of response you'll get from Skyline Church. We welcome you just as you are, with all your doubts, all your questions, and all your concerns. Your problems with religion are understandable, and I promise at Skyline you'll experience the love of Jesus Christ, not the revenge of a Sith Lord.
Skyline Church.
Politics and news today. In a few minutes, we will switch gears and I will get into a Bible study, but I've been reading some comments about different things I said over the air, particularly Bernie Sanders, and I was reading some comments, some very well-worded comments from Brendan, talking about how you try to add up the policies of Bernie and he starts giving these incredible figures. Now, you're absolutely right, Brendan. I have heard different actual figures, but they all agree that it's infeasible, that it's outrageous. All thinking people know this. Unfortunately, once again, the operative phrase here is thinking people. Now, I called Sanders and Trump both populists. I said that was the only thing they had in common. But perhaps I'm defining a populist different than other people, particularly Tim. Tim says, you're right, populists feed off passions and preying on fears. If the economy does a downturn, enough of those same passions and fears could shift support for Bernie in combination with those who don't like Bernie but really don't like Trump more. But I personally think it unlikely that Bernie can beat Trump, even if the economy isn't great. Well, Tim, I reject the claim that Trump plays off fears, unless we mean the uncommon or what should be a very legitimate fear, such as the fear and need to have our border control. Some fear is good. I don't put my hand on a burner when it's lit because I have the fear that I'll burn my hand off. So not all fear is bad. But this particular narrative often accuses Trump of being a racist, playing to the fear that white people have of different skin colors. And maybe that's not the point you personally are attempting to make, Tim, but that is often the meaning behind the statement Trump plays off fears. And his many, many, many Latino and African-American supporters would say otherwise. In any event, Tim, thank you for your comment. Regarding my comments about Dick Van Dyke endorsing Bernie Sanders and how he shouldn't go on the air bragging about how he hasn't lost his marbles in the same commercial where he endorses Sanders, Karen says, I agree. Melinda says, Bernie Sanders, Dick Van Dyke, you are ordered to report to Economics 101A. I like that. Teddy says, Dick Van Dyke, please don't be another Hollywood kook. Blah. Mary Poppins would be ashamed of you. Ed says Van Dyke publicly endorsed Bernie Sanders as his choice for the Democratic candidate in the 2016 presidential election and 2020 U.S. presidential election. Van Dyke, a New Deal Democrat, had not actively campaigned for a candidate since Eugene McCarthy in 1968. Regarding the hypocrisy of pro-choice candidate Elizabeth Warren blasting Michael Bloomberg for encouraging a female staffer to have an abortion, Gary says she did knock herself off her pro-choice perch. Brendan says, I thought baby killing was her favorite hobby. Isn't abortion, the later the better, practically a sacrament to the left? Did you know that they did a vote this week and every single Democrat in Washington refused to vote for a bill that would keep a baby alive after a botched abortion? Ladies and gentlemen, this was a vote not for abortion, but for infanticide.
Regarding my comments about Castro being praised for bringing literacy to Cuba, Nancy says, unbelievable. John says, don't you mean Cuber? Yes, he did pronounce it that way a few times, didn't he? Cuber. Donald says, problem is the literacy program was forced indoctrination. Oh, I have no doubt about that, Donald. I'm sure the kids were treated to such classics as the Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx. Heck, I wouldn't be surprised if they made Mein Kampf required reading. Regarding Bernie Sanders' comments about Cuba and Israel and the strong rebuke I offered, Karen says, right on, shine this light in this dark world and expose evil. Valerie says, I just don't get Bernie supporters. Well, it's easy, Valerie. He promises a lot of free stuff. Of course, nothing is ever free, not if it's coming from the government. Our tax dollars will pay for this out of our noses. There will be nothing financially free under socialism and no other kinds of freedom either. Say goodbye to freedom of speech. Say goodbye to freedom of religion. Pure socialism gives the government so much control that we end up living under nothing but a totalitarian dictatorship for all intents and purposes. And listen, folks, stop talking about Denmark and Sweden. These people are listening to what Bernie says, and they say he's out of his mind. We are not that kind of socialism. Yes, there are elements of socialism in that country, but they have all kinds of capitalistic elements. So we have elements of socialism already in America. We've had it for years. You talk about the pure socialism, and you're looking at things like Cuba and Venezuela. So this is a red herring when they try to throw you over to Europe. Anyway, none of this common sense will matter with half our voters come November because our schools and universities are glorifying socialism. So instead of doing the math, Valerie, which Bernie was challenged to do in the debate and could not do, incidentally, people will instead follow the Pied Piper. Healthcare, free. College tuition, free. Now, speaking of comparing Castro with the Prime Minister of Israel, my brother, who lives in Israel, says this. Bernie not only calls the Israeli Prime Minister a racist, but the Israeli government as well. He not only has an affinity for Castro, but also the old Soviet Union. He never has anything bad to say about Iran and was against the killing of Soleimani, a major terrorist responsible for the murder of thousands of Americans. He favors totalitarian, oppressive regimes. Bernie is not against actual racism like Iran, but against Israel because Israel's a Zionist, nationalist, democratic, sovereign nation with a thriving economy based on innovation and solving problems people actually care about. Israel is no longer the old-style socialist country of Bernie's youth. There are over 1 million Israeli citizens that came from the former Soviet Union that are also called reactionary. They know what it was to live in a socialist republic, which is why most of them came here. But calling Israel a racist country has lost its impact. Bernie calls anybody that doesn't agree with him a racist, including half of America. Very well put from my younger brother. Of course, neither one of us are too young anymore. We're both in our 60s, but I am 2 years older. Okay, we're going to switch gears, and I'm going to do an interesting Bible study, but we don't have enough time in the program to get through all of it. In fact, we'll barely start it. I will finish it in a future program. Next week, Jim Barrier comes on as a guest, but I will finish it in a few weeks somewhere, some program. Trust me. I'm reading from Matthew chapter 22. This is the parable of the banquet. Matthew 22, 1 through 14. Jesus spoke to them again in parables, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son. He sent his servants to those who had been invited to the banquet to tell them to come, but they refused to come. Then he sent some more servants and said, tell those who have been invited that I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle have been butchered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding banquet. But they paid no attention and went off, one to his field, another to his business. The rest seized his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged. He sent his army and destroyed those murderers and burnt their city. Then he said to his servants, the wedding banquet is ready, but those I invited did not deserve to come. Go to the street corners and invite to the banquet anyone you find. So the servants went out into the streets and gathered all the people they could find, both good and bad, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. More of this very interesting parable of Jesus when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Not sure when to try an unusual novel? Let the customers speak for themselves. Here is another Amazon customer review for Bob Siegel's latest book, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. While there is nothing in this book that would stop you from giving it to or reading it to your kids, this book will certainly hold an adult's interest as well. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has it all. Magic, talking cats, bullies who get their comeuppance, fun dialogue, and a good story. Do not let the title fool you. While Christmas does play a prominent role, this is really not a Christmas story, and it can be read at any time of the year, except February 31st. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Never knew they played such cool music while Jesus was telling his parables, did you? Anyway, we were in the middle of a parable of Jesus found in Matthew where it's called the parable of the banquet. This king wanted to have this big banquet. A lot of the people that he invited didn't come, so they went on the streets, invited others. I'm continuing now from verse 11. But when the king came in to see the guest, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes. Friend, he asked, how did you get in here without wedding clothes? The man was speechless. Then the king told the attendants, tie him hand and foot and throw him outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, that's a phrase that's commonly used when they're talking about hell. Now, this is unusual. It seems confusing to see God punishing people because they wouldn't go to a fun party. But notice what God calls them earlier. He calls them murderers. So there's more to this than meets the eye. They're not just party poopers. Now, there's a lot of other teachings in the New Testament on Judgment Day that show concern for more than partying. What is God's concern here? God is concerned that we live up to our full potential as human beings. True, part of that potential is turning from sin and living a righteous life. But we must assume that people already knew that part before Jesus told the parable. We hear about that aspect of Christianity all the time. And it is significant that Jesus took the time to point out another dimension. Just a few minutes ago in the show, I read a comment from my brother Paul, who lives in Israel, and I mentioned we're both Jewish. We went very different roads. We were both raised as liberal atheist Jews. I became a born-again Christian. He became an Orthodox Jew. He lives in Israel. I've been to Israel a few times. He actually lives there. When he first came back from a trip to Israel, which was where he converted, knowing that I was a Christian, and of course, we were having, needless to say, somewhat of an argumentative discussion about it. He said something in trying to show the superiority of Judaism to Christianity. He said something that I'll never forget. He says, we Jews believe in life, not anti-life. Now, while that's not a correct assessment of the teaching of Jesus or the New Testament, my brother was onto something, because that was a correct assessment of what he had heard from a lot of Christians. Isn't that how most people view Christianity? They think God is this big celestial killjoy who doesn't want us to have a good time. Says, hey, knock it off down there. Life is serious. You're having too much fun. Well, how interesting that Jesus should compare the Christian life to a banquet. This isn't the only place where we read this kind of stuff. In Ecclesiastes, and this is not a parable, this is very plain writing by King Solomon. He says, a man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. You wouldn't think you'd find a verse like that in the Bible, would you? Let me read it again. A man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? God not only wants us to get a kick out of life and enjoy it, he's saying without me, you can't really enjoy it the way you're meant to. Now, a banquet or an enjoyment in isolation, of course, is a one-time fun event. But thinking of all of life together as a banquet is something else altogether. Thinking of life as a banquet is thinking of a dream come true. Now, what do we mean by a dream? The desire to make something uniquely wonderful out of your life. This could refer to a relationship, a special place, a realized talent, a relevant contribution. Since we serve a holistic God, he usually likes to see more than one of these things in our lives. But one way or the other, a dream implies the arrival of a preset goal. As a Christian, this means a goal that you and God set together, something you both wanted to see happen because he took his desires and made them your desires. You're thinking, well, do I have a right to pray for my own desires? Well, what if God's desires are inside of you? Now, yeah, you have to be careful. We have sinful desires too, and we're told the heart is deceitful. But just to be optimistic here, Psalm 37:4, listen to this. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Now, it doesn't have to be so big that it takes our world by storm, but it must be big enough that you wake up in the morning excited to be alive. Sometimes dreams seem impossible, but those are the best kind, because then it's easier to give God all the credit. Impossible dreamers have made history. There was a man named Martin Luther. He was a dreamer. He was a Catholic monk. Now, what I'm about to say, I mean no disrespect to the Catholic Church. I could tell you just as many problematic stories about Protestant churches. But this is the beginning of the Protestant Reformation, coming from the word protest, a protest made on behalf of Martin Luther. Martin Luther was actually a Catholic monk and a scholar, taught at a German university. And yet, by that time, the Catholic Church had gotten indoctrinated in so much legalism that Luther had this fear of God. Every day he worried that he was going to go to hell. He thought God hated him. He really couldn't stand God, but it was a hard thing to come out and admit. And then one day he had a revelation. Now, this revelation had already been in Romans chapter 1 for hundreds and hundreds of years, but it was very new to Martin Luther. Not that he hadn't seen it, but the light bulb had not gone on. It said, the just will live by faith. He realized he's serving a God who wants to give him salvation as a gift. He's going to freely forgive him of his sins and give him his spirit and help him overcome the sin. He got so excited about that, he couldn't stop talking about it, and he couldn't stop writing about it. Now, other people have been saying the same things for years, but this just happened to happen at the time of the second greatest information exchange in history, the printing press. The three greatest information exchanges in history, the first one was the time of Jesus, where the Greeks had united the world culturally, and in every country, most people, at least in the marketplace, in the courts, anybody that did trading or business, they spoke Greek. And then the Romans had unified things because they were all living under the Roman Empire. They had paved roads. They had a postal system. They had inns at convenient locations. That's considered the first greatest information exchange of all of history. Second one being the printing press. Third one, of course, is the internet. You are living during the time of the third greatest information exchange in history. And because Martin Luther, who actually was a Donald Trump kind of person, talked without a filter, well, he got excommunicated from the Catholic Church, but it started a whole movement, and it began the Lutheran Church, and then that was just the beginning of many kinds of Protestant denominations. Speaking of dreaming, here's a man with a similar name, but it's only in part of his name, Martin Luther King, with the famous I Have a Dream speech, instrumental in passing the Civil Rights Bill. Well, I got through more of that than I thought, but I will share more of these stubborn dreamers on a future program. We will see you next week. You're always welcome. Your questions are welcome too.
The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.